He cannot disappear.
We hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad. But
accidents happen. They do.
He's done it. There's his feet. Well, this is incredible.
And out will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Brian Sini. I'm the guy behind NRL Physio and all the stuff you see on socials. I've got my co-host James here on a Sunday night, mate. I think tonight I want to say we're purely an injury podcast. Let's just not talk about the footy. Nothing, no games to really discuss. I think we can just move, keep it to injuries tonight, if that's okay with you.
It's pretty all right with me, Brian. We've gone 0-2 on the fandom front, so we're fronted up tonight in our cool Blink-182 shirts because we are in our mid-30s and we are cool dads. So we'll rep out brand and we'll look to bigger and better things on the football front next week in round two, I reckon.
Oh, mate, it was a it was a brutal day out there today, so I just didn't feel like wearing any footy paraphernalia tonight. It's it was a bit of a come down, certainly from the excitement of the season starting. But, mate, as you said, can't get any better than rep and blink. So, yeah, let's get into it. Look, guys, as we've said the last couple of weeks, we're on YouTube now. That seems to be going pretty well. So if you're watching us on YouTube, thanks. Give us a thumbs up. Please subscribe. Give us a review. All of the things. I think we're new on YouTube. We're trying to build that, and I'm still trying to understand it and get my head around it. But yeah, I know subscribing and giving us a thumbs up means a lot, and it helps, you know, the algorithm and get us in front of people. So if you could do that, please do so. As always, guys, you know why you're here. We talk about the injuries in the NRL. We relate it back to re-injury risk, performance implications, but also talk about Supercoach fantasy and how that's going to affect it. If you get value out of this, patreon.com/NRLphysio. That's where I do all my deep, you know, in-depth analysis. I you know, run through all of these things week in, week out with guys in there. The casualty ward came out for the first time this week. It was over 3,000 words, covered 40 players. So all those people in my DMs who are asking, about this player and that player, they're all covered on Patreon. If you head on over there, I doubt you'll have many questions left after you've read the casualty ward, because it's all pretty well covered there. We do question and answers, all that kind of stuff. But otherwise, guys, yeah, let's get straight into it. We've got a lot to talk about, so let's hit the injuries for round one.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time, and I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
On you, Brian. We've got the round one injury wrap. This is going to be a massive night tonight, so we're going to rip and tear and get through quite a lot of injury content. First game of the round, well, this is sort of the second part of the first round, I guess, was Knights v Raiders. Good win by the Raiders here up in Newcastle. And Aro Tuala, both in our Super Coach setups, he was a quad strain out of this one. Dylan Lucas was a concussion or broken nose, and Danny Levi with a quad cork there. Who do you want to talk to first, Brian? I guess Tuala's probably the one, isn't he? We went in together with him for our standard setups and didn't work out real well.
Mate, I haven't talked to you, but I visited you last night and I still didn't tell you, and I'm finally going to come clean. He dropped out of my side for Kiraz at the very last minute.
You left me high and dry.
I not only like spruiked the shit out of him last week, but I couldn't find a way to get Kiraz in. I just could not do it, and he was my only option. And yeah, so it happened. So I've completely stitched you up there. But to be honest with you, nothing makes me happier than stitching you up when it comes to Supercoach, seeing we are against
you. You know how I feel, Brian? I feel like Jared Hayne when he got rinsed by a crypto scam fraud guy in prison. I feel like you've just defrauded me.
And we both, in terms of our
Supercoach. And I'm a good guy.
Yeah. In terms of our Supercoach prospects, we may as well both be in jail because we are both horrid.
Yes. That's better.
Look, but Anari Tuala, quad strain, it sounds minor at the moment. The Knights haven't said anything. Guys can come back within a week with a minor quad strain. The most it limits them is with kicking. And a guy like Nicho Hynes is someone, you know, that kind of thing. So we can see guys come back within a week. It'll just depend on the grading, but probably most within that 1 to 3 weeks. Like, it's very unlikely going to be like a major tear or something like that. Danny Levi, quad cork. This is a weird one because it was said to be a quad cork, but he was kind of like stretching his hammy and touching in behind his knee. I didn't see any mechanism for that. I went back and checked and couldn't really find anything obvious. So, I mean, like, you just have to believe the report of quad cork, and if it's a quad cork, he'll be fine for next week. Dylan Lucas, I think, is the big talking point. As much as Dylan Lucas, from a Supercoach perspective, was a good prospect, I think the opportunity it then gives someone like Kai Pierce-Paul. So he had the concussion. So he failed by the official interchange logs. It said failed HIA. We haven't heard whether he, you know, has been diagnosed with a concussion, or they just put failed HIA because he stayed off with the broken nose, because he did have a broken nose too. But if he's got a concussion, which I'm assuming at this point in time, he will more than likely miss next week. We'll say it again, you know, we saw all the shenanigans with the 11-day stand down last year and how that was subverted here and there, so I won't believe anything until Team List Tuesday comes out and we see whether he's named or not. But I think you could probably be 90 to 95% sure that he won't play next week. That might be enough for Kai Pierce-Paul to take that starting job, James. I mean, I'll throw to you as, you know, our footy head here. He looked real good, hey?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's in a lot of my draft setups, actually, Brian. So that news is music to my ears. And he added a bit of an extra dimension there for the Knights. I thought he was good when he got the minutes.
100%, mate. So, yeah, I think you could definitely have Kai Pierce-Paul there next week at the very least, and that might be all he needs. So he'll be someone I'm eyeing off this week and potentially buying the week after.
Very good, Brian. Warriors v Sharks was next. Good grindy win by the Sharks on that one. Wade Egan, elbow injury. Kurt Capel has been sort of diagnosed as a rib cartilage injury. That's going to make him a little bit of a dicey prospect. Then a few more. Ronaldo Militalo, Sipic Talakai were ankle injuries. And then another one was Murata Niokore, who was ruled out pregame with a foot fracture. I guess that's probably going to be extended time out for Murata Niokore, wouldn't you say, Brian?
Well, mate, I literally put it in there because it's something that you hear foot fracture and exactly your response. I was like, oh, he's going to be out for ages because, you know, you're looking at usually most foot fractures 8 weeks, probably minimum, and then potentially longer. But I read the initial report from them and they called it a minor foot fracture, which looks still, I'm thinking, 6 to 8 weeks. But they said he was coming out of the boot, so he suffered it 2 weeks ago, and he came out of the boot late this week. So, in other words, at 2 weeks post-injury, which shocked me. And so I was like, oh, that is quite, yeah, like surprising. But I was then said on Patreon, as soon as I saw, because I hear minor foot fracture and I'm still thinking 6 to 8 weeks, but the fact he was coming out of the boot, I'm like, that's a good sign that potentially, you know, something like an avulsion fracture, like a minor, you know,
lateral league, ACFL, CFL,
you're not all that concerned about. So I'm thinking, and I kind of put round 3 to 5 as his return range, or 4 to 6 even potentially, and I think the Warriors have said that he could return as soon as round 4. So I think more, I just wanted to talk about him and say he could be back sooner than we all expect, hearing foot fracture, because you think long term. Ronaldo Militalo, Sia Sifatalakai with ankle injuries. I didn't see Militalo's, couldn't find it, but Sifatalakai, it was that classic syndesmosis injury mechanism. Now, these are always interesting ones. If you're a long-term listener of the pod, you know that we talk about these, in that Sifa played out the rest of the game. He came out post-match and said, I'll be fine for next week. We know that we've seen guys time and time again do that and then have a scan on Monday or Tuesday and find out they've got like a moderate to high grade syndesmosis injury and either, you know, need 4 to 6 weeks out or need surgery and need 6 to 8 weeks out. So, yeah, I'm not counting my chickens with Sifa. It's obviously a good sign that he played out the game. It's still is more in his favour. I just more say for this kind of injury, if a player plays out the game, like if it was another injury, like a hamstring strain or, you know, an AC joint or something like that, I'd be like, oh, he played out the game, he'll be pretty sweet for next week. But with these, I'm a bit dubious. There's a lot more that sort of end up in more significant injuries. Kurt Capewell with the rib cartilage injury, pain management, but one of the most painful injuries. So he could still miss next week. I mean, Blake Laurie, perfect example. We're going to talk about him soon, but I may as well talk about him now. He suffered the rib cartilage injury in the final trial, and it's 2 weeks later, and he's still not right to play. And it's not because they're worried about further damage. It's because of the pain. He's literally, it will just be that painful. I think we call them the police injuries every breath you take, every move you make. It's just super, super painful, even sleeping. So, yeah, look, usually guys will come back within 1 to 3 weeks, but heavily needled, you know, lots of padding, that kind of, you know, that kind of protection that you need. So he could be back next week, but it brings real concern for performance and for aggravation risk. So he's not someone, even if he returns next week, I'm not super confident that he'll be able to get through the whole game without aggravating it. Wade Egan's the big interesting one, and especially from a physio nerd perspective, you know, we like to watch the video. We watched the video. There wasn't a whole lot. He kind of went down, and there did seem to be a slight hyperextension. Wasn't a great video angle for it. It was kind of from the wrong angle that you couldn't see how much hyperextension there was. The interesting thing here, James, is I got a little whisper from the ground that Wade Egan told the doc that he felt a pop in his elbow, and that's why they ended up dragging him off. So when you start talking about pops, I mean, best case, it's a pop of like the, you know, the radial head kind of, you know, having a little subluxation or something like that. But more commonly,
the MCL, maybe.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe like ligament, yeah. Either medial ligament with a hyperextension or worst case biceps tendon, which you would hope it's not that. I'm not. Mm. It was just purely because I heard pop. I wasn't really thinking biceps until I heard pop, and that kind of does give me some concern. So, look, even if it's the medial ligament in the elbow, they can come back pretty quickly, even if it's completely torn. It very rarely needs surgery. I don't think I've tracked anyone requiring surgery for that kind of ligament tear. They usually just brace it and give it time to scar up, and away we go. A bit like the MCL in the knee as well. And guys can come back in 3 to 5 weeks, kind of in that range. So it is a relatively quick recovery. You just don't want it to be biceps, because then you're talking surgery in 3 months. So that's kind of the options for Wade Egan. I'd love to be more specific. The video just wasn't great. I'm happy to give you guys the analysis when I can, but I'm also going to put my hand up when I don't have enough information. And this is one of those times where I can't be much more specific than that, unfortunately.
It's a watch and wait scenario. So we're on to the Storm Panthers, Brian. Only one to talk about here. Very interesting, though, for, I guess, fantasy purposes and for the Storm in general, about Cameron Munster and his groin. He spoke on, I think it was on Channel 9, didn't he, when he was ruled out pre-game. Do you want to speak to this in a bit more detail? Pretty interesting update from Cam Munster.
Mate, I almost want to throw to you, get this off my plate so I don't have to talk about it, because what's going on here? I mean, they obviously don't know, so I'm not sure how we can talk about it in all that much certainty or accuracy. We can kind of speculate on a few different things. I think more than likely it's to do with his history of osteitis pubis, which is inflammation of that pubic bone, where your groin muscles and your abdominal muscles all attach in at that pubic symphysis, that hard bone sort of at the bottom of your abdominals there. It sounds like he's really good one day, and then the next day he's just shot, which look, sounds like an osteitis pubis thing. Like, patients that I've had with osteitis pubis, that is the typical presentation, but you will usually have a scan and inflammation will show up on that. You know, you will have a clear definitive, we're dealing with osteitis pubis here. But the fact that they've done scans and it seems all pretty clear, I think one of the, and you and I love a physio nerd joke once again, but I think one of the comments on my Instagram, which I had a good old laugh about, is he just needs some pain education.
Oh, that's good.
So he just needs to learn how to, you know, how he's thinking about his pain and the psychology behind it and all that kind of stuff.
This is a
really up in the air one. I have so many questions where people are like, how long till he's back? When's he going to be performing again? This is one where, I say it all the time, I don't like uncertainty. And that's why I don't like repeat concussions, right? I don't like guys who have repeat concussions because it increases the uncertainty that I have. I like being able to go to an injury and be like, it's a grade 2 hamstring strain that takes 4 to 6 weeks. The re-injury rate is this, very quantifiable. Look, every injury is different, obviously, but you can then base it around that. Something like this, it's so volatile. There's so many options here. Like, he could be out. He literally could be out for 3 months if he, they can't figure it out. He just can't get it right. He might need, adductor release surgery. And that's the extreme end, right? I'm not saying that's the most likely outcome. The most likely outcome is that he's dealing with a niggling groin issue and sometime over the next 2 to 6 weeks, they figure out his loading, get it to settle down, and away he goes. Where in that 2 to 6 weeks it falls, how do we know? But something like surgery could be the thing as well. Like, it's just so volatile. I mean, how are you with it, mate? That's kind of my sitting there with the information that we've got. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Are you pretty similar?
Yeah, I agree with your takes. I think the other thing that's concerning is there's been an off-season of soft tissue injuries with Cam Munster as well. I think calf has come up. It's always a bit of a concern when you're stacking on soft tissue things. So I think if you're someone who is most likely a draft owner, I don't think he's highly owned in standard, you're probably going to have a contingency for a decent amount of time. I guess Lukey Metcalf looked okay. You might be able to find someone else. Six is a bit of a dud position for Supercoach purposes as well. So you don't want to roster two, but if you have to, you kind of do. I think you probably want to make a good plan to have an indefinite cover there if you can, because it's just a bit, I don't like when I hear this into this into this, and it's an innocuous sort of mechanism as well. It's just a few things. I don't like the sound of it stands right now, but you never know. Like, I think Cam Munster's pretty seasoned vet in the game. He should get himself right reasonably well. He probably knows what he needs to do to get back on track.
Yeah, I think so. I think, as I said, still the most likely thing is they figure out what's going wrong, they get his loading, his training load right, and then sometime over the next, 2 to 6 weeks, and that's just like kind of a gut feel. Sometime in that time, he comes back and he's okay. But yeah, it's just I just think about like someone like Adam Elliott. Like, he had all of those groin issues and they kept affecting him, and he came back and then he aggravated again. And then he was out for he was out for 10 weeks or something, long period after aggravating it. He had surgery as well. It was just a whole thing. So hopefully Munster isn't going down the same path and they can sort it out. But yeah, it's a volatile situation. I've used that word volatile a million times, but it just is.
Very good, Brian. So we're going to go to the Eels versus Bulldogs next. Dylan Brand was an eye knock from this. Probably don't need to talk about him. He should be all good. Interesting ones were Mitch Moses with a groin injury, sort of following on from Cam Munster. He was cleared of major injury, but he's a good one to talk about because he was sort of told to modify his game in this sort of setting. He appeared to be a little bit limited in this game. And then the other one is Josh Adokar. Cleared of fracture, but sounds like a moderate to high-grade AC joint injury by the sound of things.
Yeah, they said complex AC joint injury, I think, was the way that the Bulldogs put it, which you think, moderate to high-grade, probably high-grade if they call it complex. But we've spoken about it in the past that high-grade AC joint injuries can actually see guys come back quicker than partial, like grade 2. So a complete tear can actually come back quicker than a partial tear, purely because it's all pain management. Function is part of it as well. But usually you can get the pain down relatively quickly if you've completely torn the ligament, because there's nothing there to pull on anymore. As long as you can get the function going, get the stability okay, they strap it up really, really well. That pain just isn't there anymore. Whereas with a partially torn ligament, every time you cop a knock on that shoulder, move it around, that rope that's partially torn just keeps getting pulled on over and over again. And it just, it can be really, really painful. So both injuries, whether it be grade 2 or grade 3, I say 2 to 6 weeks for both of them. And we've seen consistently in the numbers that I've tracked over time that's when guys tend to come back. So he could be back as soon as round 3. If he comes back in round 3, he would be a high risk of in-game aggravation if he cops another heavy blow on that shoulder. You have performance implications and stuff like that. But it's not going to be as long as I think they were talking fracture initially, which is going to be 6+ weeks. Mitchie Moses is the interesting one, mate. I think there's a lot of you know, interest both from a NRL standpoint and a Supercoach standpoint. The groin is going to limit his kicking, number one, the most by far. He got ordered not to kick, and then I think Brad Arthur was angry at him for kicking at the end of the game. Like, he was not happy with him because he put a few kicks in. So it's going to affect his kicking, number one. I would be surprised if he's goal kicking any time in the next 1 to 2 weeks. The one thing I will say about groin issues is that the guys can play through minor groin strains. Like, we talk about groin, and even at, you know, my sort of level of dealing with community sport as well, like, minor groin strain, I say, is day-to-day, in that it can improve significantly day on day. So you can be there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and see significant improvement time on time. So it isn't something that generally requires a long time on the sideline, but it's just that aggravation risk moving forward. It is minor and you are playing through something. So a bit like the AC joint injury, it means you're at risk of aggravation. So that's why they get ordered, hey, let's try and limit your kicking. And it can limit your side-to-side, like, acceleration, which is part of Moses' game. He's a great running half as well. So I think moving forward, I expect him to be affected by it for at least the next 2 to 3 weeks. How that plays out, I think, as I said, the thing that will be affected most will be kicking. So I just would be surprised. You've got Gutho there, who is such a good kicker. I just think, you know, you just stick with Gutho for the next couple of weeks and let it settle down. And it could actually affect his ability to take on the line and bust through the line and those kind of movements that are part of his game. But from a Supercoach perspective, mate, once again, throwing to you as our Supercoach expert, what are you doing with Mitch Moses? With that information, you know, he's got a groin issue. He might not be kicking for the next couple of weeks. Surely you're probably not selling him with the state of Supercoach at the moment. You've probably got bigger problems.
Yeah, I think you've got bigger issues. If you're rolling him at 7, you don't want to jump off. Yeah, you probably want to jump off week 3 if it looks like he's going to hemorrhage cash and there's going to be a 100 grand swing between who you can get in, who you drop. I think you just take another week and just see what it looks like. Parra looked pretty good. I didn't think they looked too bad. Granted, they're playing the Dogs.
They've got soft draw too. Great, I think, like, they've got Dogs now.
They do have a good draw.
They've got a good draw, yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be running away just yet. I think I'd be hanging around for at least another week and then reassess in a week's time.
Agreed.
Very good. Next game, Brian, was Titans v Dragons. Dragons are on the board for 2024, so get up, Dragons fans, and get pumped up about that one. Blake Laurie was ruled out pregame with a rib cartilage concern, and Kieran Foran was a calf concern, ruled out pregame as well. So a couple of pregame injuries there for those two gents. Blake Laurie's probably a week-to-week prospect, isn't he, Brian? He's already missed a couple.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be that pain management, as we spoke about with Kurt Capewell. If he comes back, he's going to be a risk of in-game aggravation, although they are giving him quite a good amount of time now, so that does lower that risk there. So when he does come back, I'd be a little bit more confident than, say, if Kurt Capewell played next week. I'd be more concerned about him. Foran's interesting with the calf. I mean, we've spoken about Foran that many times about his propensity for lower limb soft tissue strains. No surprise that they held him out this week with the bye next week if he's dealing with a little calf niggle or a lower limb issue, but I think it had been reported somewhere that it was a calf. So calves are tough. They linger. He could potentially not be back in round 3. It sounds minor, but I just worry. And look, we'll talk about it in Supercoach Corner as to why I'm concerned about a player that plays off his hip and, you know, Foran's not quite 100%. But yeah, I just don't like calves. I don't like calves in older players, which Foran is, unfortunately. So he should be back round 3, but I'm not over the moon about this situation.
One to keep an eye on for sure. The last game of the round, Brian, that you witnessed in person was Dolphins v Cowboys. Ray Stone was a concussion. He had Category 1 signs. So he won't be back next week with the mandatory 11-day stand down sort of time frame there. So we don't need to touch on that for too much longer. Connolly Lemuelu dislocated kneecap out of this game. That was on the opposite side to his preseason knee injury on his left, which is the multi-ligament injury. And then Tommy Gilbert's a very interesting discussion about his ACL and some fairly complicated medical, flow-on effects there from that as well.
Yeah, I'll just flick off on Lemuelu, because obviously we've got a fair bit to talk about with Gilbert here. So Lemuelu, the video isn't real clear. It only shows one angle from the back. You don't really see too much because the tackling player covers up the knee. It didn't look like the knee collapsed in all that much. So, you know, things like ACL, MCL, you'd hope that they're okay. The Dolphins have said they suspect a patella dislocation, not any ligament issues. Although Wayne Bennett was pretty classic Wayne Bennett in the post-match press conference. He was kind of like, no, that's hasn't been decided yet. And, you know, of course. But so if it is a kneecap dislocation, which is probably most likely at this point, considering that's the reports from the team and the video doesn't really tell us much at all, you've got kind of two options. If A, the dislocation has occurred and there isn't too much soft tissue damage, you can usually get away with just rehabbing it, letting, you know, those ligaments and tendons and all those kind of things heal. 3 to 6 weeks, or probably 4 to 6 weeks. 3 is probably a bit quick, so 4 to 6 weeks is the most common kind of thing. But if they do come back in that time frame at 4 to 6 weeks, there is an increased risk of re-dislocation moving forward. This is one situation where even if he's able to avoid surgery, surgery is one of those things that decreases the risk of re-dislocation moving forward. So if he requires surgery, you're looking at 3+ months, but his risk of re-dislocation on return is, yeah, very, very low. Whereas if he can come back in that 3 to 6 weeks, obviously he's available sooner, which is great, but he does have an increased risk of re-dislocation moving forward. Tommy Gilbert, mate.
Big one.
A blood clot that travels from the calf to the lungs. Big deal. Big deal. We don't hear about this very often in footy circles. It's probably the first time I can remember talking about it. But really concerning. I think most of these, you know, will be fine and won't have any effects. But, yeah, it's at the end of the day, we're talking about a pretty significant medical situation as opposed to a musculoskeletal situation, which is most of the stuff that we talk about. Once you're talking about blood clots traveling in the lungs, it is a real concern. So, look, anybody listening, you would have all heard of DVTs, deep vein thrombosis, that blood clot that forms in your leg. I mean, we spoke about it on the show last week. About
the Vegas stuff.
Wearing the TED stockings and those kind of things. So, yeah, you're sitting immobile in the plane with your legs bent up, you've got decreased oxygen levels, increased cabin pressure, it all dehydrates the body, your blood's not flowing as freely through the legs. This all contributes to increasing that risk of clot formation. It's then travelled to his lungs. That's called a pulmonary embolism for anybody playing along at home. It's definitely travelling into the medical side of things. So I always like to reach out to the smartest guy we know, Dr. Sam Maxwell. He is, he's just an absolute genius. I've had a bit of back and forth with him this afternoon, and he's just sending me block of text after block of text. He's a really, really good fella.
And not to alpha you either, Brian. That's just how smart he is. It's not even to alpha you. That's not just someone just being like, oh, I'm going to bring the hammer down and alpha you. This is just Maxi being a jet.
We were going back and forth. I was throwing my pieces in. He was throwing his pieces. It was good. It was really good. But look, this is effectively from our discussion, the main points. This is a clot that, like, we refer to as provoked, so by immobility, presumably. And so usually you're looking at 3 to 6 months of anticoagulation medication, or blood thinners is the best way to put it. So your treatment protocols, they're mainly dictated by the individual risk assessment, which is based on things like any history of prior clots. Are there other risk factors for future clots? You have a family history. Are you obese? You know, those kind of factors, which obesity, obviously not an issue for Tommy Gilbert, potentially family history. We don't really know that. If you're talking about a large volume pulmonary embolism, or large, like proximal to the important arteries, generally people will be hospitalized for close monitoring. That doesn't sound like it's happened with Tom Gilbert. So potentially a good sign, the fact that he hasn't needed to go to hospital and be hospitalized. So most people aren't those big ones. So you'd just be starting the blood thinning medication pretty straight up, but the risks of coming off to operate do reduce after a few months. So that's why that I think Tom Gilbert told Corey Parker 3 months initially. That was kind of what he said. Yeah. And then classic Wayne Bennett in the press conference. And I'll give him credit. He's right. He said, look, there's no time frame on it. I think Tom's probably said 3 months is like best case scenario. I need to emphasize here when we talk about so much of the stuff we talk about on this show is like musculoskeletal issues with a very finite, relatively standard recovery periods. Once you start talking about medical stuff, the recovery range is a lot more wide. So this could be 3 months, it could be 6 months, it could be a little bit longer. The problem is the risk with operating with a pulmonary embolism is it takes time for that DVT to dissolve, that deep vein thrombosis down in the calf. And then you just can't operate on blood thinners. So you can't go off those blood thinners too soon before that DVT is dissolved, but you also can't operate with blood thinners because you'll bleed everywhere. It will be catastrophic. So that's where, you know, there is some variety there. So effectively, we came to the conclusion and what Sam was saying, Dr. Sam, we'll call him Dr. Sam. If it's a lower risk PE, pulmonary embolism, no other risk factors, 3 months of blood thinners is generally adequate, but it could be as long as 6-8 months, depending on what happens. And then lots of comments on why wasn't he on anticoagulant medication for the flight? Maybe he was. We don't know that because no treatment is 100% effective. And I was even talking to my wife about it before. She's an occupational therapist. And as she said, like, you or I could get on a flight, James, and get a blood clot. Like that it happens. 100%. Yeah, it happens to healthy people. Obviously, somebody who's injured, that risk is probably increased a little bit, but it can happen to anyone. So it is a relatively short flight from NZ. So Dr. Sam was saying, not necessarily something where he would go, oh yeah, he needs to be on anticoagulants. I think it's like 3 hours and 50 minutes. So more for those long haul flights is when you start to consider it. And it's easy in hindsight to say that kind of thing and he should have been on it. And maybe he was, but I think at the end of the day, you probably trust those NRL medical teams that they're looking after their guys in the best way possible. That's what I would like to default to anyway. Mate, I know I've ranted on. I just wanted to, like I spoke to Sam a lot about it this afternoon. I'll throw to you because you definitely have more experience than me dealing with this kind of stuff. Like I think I probably see them post like that 3 month time frame a lot of the time, you know, once they've dealt with all that kind of thing, then they're coming back for their rehab. But you working in a hospital, you deal with this kind of stuff, well, yeah, probably way more commonly than me.
Yeah, you see it quite commonly, Brian, especially if you're working acutely, like on inpatient general medical or gen surge as well, is one you see quite a lot of, orthopedics as well. I guess the interesting point to make here that I think just for people that are curious about, well, why does it take 3 months worth of a medication for something to fully dissolve? Why don't these things act quicker? The way to probably describe that it's been described to me, and this works for my fairly simple brain, is that the blood thinning medications don't work immediately to dissolve a clot. What they need to do is create an environment where your blood is a little bit thinner and that allows the clot to dissolve over time. So they talk about getting your blood to like a therapeutic range. They call it an INR, which is like a what's the abbreviation stand for? I think it's like your normalized ratio. So it's how long your blood takes to clot. So basically with the blood thinners, they call it being like therapeutic or super therapeutic. So at a higher level, and that creates the environment for those things to, I guess, dissolve as naturally as possible, if you want to use that sort of terminology. So that does take time and you have to monitor it really closely because those medications, everyone responds a bit differently. You got to start low and build up very, very slow. You got to do, I think it's like weekly blood tests at least, sometimes even more depending on your history. So there's a lot of factors involved there. I guess the ones we would see a little bit more of those people with more significant cardiac history and renal history, cholesterol, blood pressure, previous cardiac events like heart attacks or strokes are the other big ones. Because that's the other thing is if this, PE embolizes, it could end up in like a stroke scenario as well, which is, you know, bad, bad, bad news. They're things that can lead to like more mortality as well. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. And I think the frustrating thing in Tommy Gilbert's situation is they're going to have to monitor this, you know, blood thinning and medication and the level he's got to be at for such a long time. And then what you've got to do is wait for things to return to its normal level so you don't have extra bleeding in a surgery. So you've got to sort of like get it to a level within the clot, get it back to a level so you don't bleed out excessively in surgery. It's a really difficult balance. So, yeah, feel like, you know, obviously thinking about Tommy Gilbert there is going to be pretty awful. Probably a really good question to answer here, though, Brian. I think this was one that was posed to you was, you know, in the scenario for Tom here, if he's going to be at least 3 months where they're figuring out medications and whether he's on blood thinners, do they go the conservative route of ACL rehab as opposed to waiting for surgery and get that ball rolling or not? Because I've never crossed brace protocol to anyone. Because I guess if there's physios listening, they'll probably be thinking, oh, yeah, why don't they cross-brace him if they've got all this time and he's, you know, can't really do much else on the surgery front, why don't they cross-brace him? What do you think about that question? I think it's an interesting one.
Mate, at the end of the day, for me, I think it's a no-brainer. They've got nothing to lose. We've spoken about this bracing protocol on here before, about how there is growing evidence and there's some great studies coming out about ACL ruptures in certain situations not needing surgery. Mm. So going into a brace, and it's a very strict bracing protocol, so they have to start at 90 degrees. So in other words, the knee's bent up to kind of that right angle for, I think it's a period of 3 to 4 weeks. So that's pretty full on in itself. And then, you know, they're slowly brought back out to full range from there over a period of several weeks. So it's nothing to laugh at. It's still pretty strict, but it's not surgery at the end of the day. Now, we haven't seen it in the NRL. We've seen it in a few pro sports around the world, but very limited in professional athletes. And that's why when people ask me, why aren't players trying this? It's because a lot of the evidence for it being successful are in just general everyday people. And when we're talking about general everyday people, if I go in a brace for 2-3 months and then it doesn't work out, my ACL doesn't heal, I don't gain my function back, then I just get surgery and I've lost 2 to 3 months, which for me, I'm not playing for sheep stations. It's not that big a deal if I'm good in January next year or March next year. Not really that big a deal. For someone like Tom Gilbert or any professional athlete, that can be a big deal. 2 or 3 months to them can be, you know, new contracts, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It can be their livelihood. So it is the predictability or the weight of data behind surgery is the thing that puts them towards surgery at this point in time. But here, they're stuck for 3 months anyway, at least 3 months. So I just think, why not? Why not give it a try? The only complication is, and we're getting a bit technical here, but effectively, anyone who goes on this bracing protocol, because of the immobilization, so in other words, because you're in that brace, a bit like air travel, every person who goes on this bracing protocol automatically goes on blood thinning medication. So this isn't Tom Gilbert. This is if you or I did it and decided to do the bracing, we have to be under the guidance of a sports doc and we have to go on blood thinning medication. Now, it's once again, the data's not there and I'm not aware of it, and I've reached out to a few people and they've said they're not quite sure either. They kind of said, we'll put it back on the sports docs. Because he's got a current DVT, he has a DVT, is that a contraindication for doing the cross-bracing protocol? Or is it like, well, he's on anticoagulants, blood thinning medication anyway. He's already a candidate for cross-bracing protocol. So, look, I don't know whether we're going to hear about it at all, and I don't know whether they're open to it, you know, that kind of thing. But I just think, because in the past, the excuse has always been, like, we talk about Luke Keary. I think we spoke about Luke Keary. He saw 3 specialists who all told him, because he suffered it really early in the season, they said try the bracing because he had a really good tear. The two ends of his ACL were pretty lined up even though they were torn. 3 surgeons told him to give it a try, and he saw a fourth, and the fourth said have surgery, so he had surgery. And it's like, oh man, like if Luke Keary didn't do it, no one's going to do it. Like that, it's just not going to happen. But here, you've got someone who has to wait 3 months, no matter what. Mm. So I just would love for it to happen. Because, look, it's a physio nerd kind of thing, and I know we're ranting on about it. But, yeah, I just think they've got nothing to lose. I don't see what there is to lose unless there's a problem with the clotting clotting thing, which is a bit outside of my area. Yeah. And once again, that's got to go to a sports doc and get them to figure it out. But I'd be interested to hear if they're considering it.
I guess the only other thing would be other like intra-articular pathology as well. We don't really know the scan results or whether he's got, you know, they do talk a little bit about like a mid-substance ACL tear being prognostically better. And if he's got some other co-concomitant things, that may well really matter as well. We sort of don't know the specifics of his exact injury, but I guess hypothetically, if we're talking clean ACL, he's already got a DVT, he's already on anticoags. Would that preclude him? I guess it's the early stage of cross bracing because you locked at 90 degrees, you locked at a right angle for 4 weeks. It's a pretty long time and pretty limiting to, you know, everyday activity and things like that. But for him, I don't know. I think it's a fairly good question that you got posited, to be honest, Brian. It's certainly a good talking point, I think, that's for sure.
Yeah, and really I think the big question from a lot of fans will be, well, how long would his return to play be if he went down that path? Once again, not a lot of great evidence on this, but I would say you're probably looking around that 5 to 6 month mark is potentially, you know, where he could return. The other thing that we don't have a lot of information on is even in these cases where the ACL heals under cross bracing, the re-injury rate hasn't been dictated yet. Mm. So once again, the uncertainty around, I know the ACL re-injury rate, even if you get surgery, is still quite high. You know, it can be anywhere from 5 to 10% in professional athletes, and potentially higher if you're talking, you know, second, third, fourth ACL injuries, but you at least know what it is. I think it's that fear of the unknown. It's like, we don't know what the re-injury rate for these kind of things are. That, yeah, but potentially 5 to 6 months, which, you know, the Dolphins are going to go on to win the grand final this year. So if Tom Gilbert wants to be part of that, then potentially he could get the cross bracing protocol.
Maybe that's an option. Good shout, Brian. We're just going to wrap up a few more before we go on to the Patreon questions, Brian. So we've got from Vegas, Jason Saab with a grade 2 hamstring injury. We're sort of getting keen on Tommy Talau getting named in Team List Tuesday, because that would be very, very on brand for us. And the only other ones to talk about are Adam Reynolds with a knee injury and Billy Smith with a hamstring injury. So a couple of sort of key injuries there for the Vegas squads. Who do you want to talk to about those three guys to start with, Brian?
Yeah, I'll just flick through them pretty quickly. Jason Saab, it's sounding like a grade 2. We haven't had confirmation yet. He had scans on Thursday by all accounts, but I think we can safely assume at the moment it's probably a grade 2, which is what we spoke about on the pod last week. So you're looking at usually 4 to 6 weeks, could be a little bit longer for him being a, you know, high-end sprinter. It's a big part of his game. Is there some tendon involvement? So that can take it a little bit longer. As you said, Tommy Talau season, I really hope he's picked just so I can clip up that that rant yes. of yours from the preseason, which would be lovely. Adam Reynolds with an E sounds like nothing too major. I think minor MCL sprain was what I've been told, so he should be fine for this week. I just included Billy Smith in there because I'd just been told, once again, little whispers, which went to the Patreons way earlier this week, is that Billy Smith's hamstring injury is apparently anything but minor. It sounds like it's more like around the 6 week kind of hamstring issue range. So for those Roosters guys who are starting at the moment, they may be starting. Like, that's not concrete, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, that's definite, but that's what I've been told by somebody who, yeah, would know. So yeah, probably around 6 weeks for those Roosters outside backs is pretty locked in.
Yeah, okay, so good news if you got them in fantasy circles. We'll go straight into the Patreon questions, Brian, because we've got lots to get through here. So as you mentioned earlier, patreon.com/NRL Physio. If you want the content, you want more answers, you want to share your love of Blink-182 with Brian, you can always get around him on Patreon there as per usual. Question number one, Brian. So we've got a question first and foremost about Nicho Hynes. So he didn't take the first kick at goal. Do you think these quad injury is something we need to worry about moving forward, or you're not as concerned?
No, I think he copped a knock. I watched the game, and I'm pretty sure he copped a knock, and he was just kind of getting that sorted out. So I don't think it was anything to do with the quad, because he then kicked for the rest of the game. So, in other words, I just don't think it's anything to worry about. I think we're good.
No, I don't think so either. I'm a Nico owner in a couple of drafts, and I am not that concerned. Question number two is about Ryan Papps. So what is the chance of him re-injuring his knee and ankle? I think the bigger concern here, Ryan, no goal kicking.
Yeah.
That's a concern.
Yeah, 100%. I spoke about it in the preseason. I think it's all just vibe, like, you know, mental. He hasn't played for the best part of two seasons. Let's just, because Nick Meaney's kicking him pretty well. I know his percentage hasn't been the highest over the last couple of seasons, but he nailed a few the other night. I just think it's really hard to predict when he's going to get that goal kicking back, because I think it's that vibe kind of approach. It's like, how are you feeling? You think you're ready to goal kick yet? Oh, no. And I'm sure Paps would probably be like, yes, I want a goal kick. But it's probably the coaching staff just coming over the top being like, mate, we just want you to focus on your game, focus on getting back, being healthy for however long it is. So, yeah, it could be a while. You just don't know, which is hard, because I don't think it's a physical thing. Re-injuring his knee or ankle, it's not high at all, because re-injury for his knee or ankle, you're talking about a patella fracture or an ankle fracture dislocation. Both of those things are very rare injuries. He's barely more susceptible to either of those injuries now that he's had surgery to stabilize him, because he's got, you know, metal and pins and plates and all those kind of things that have gone in there to stabilize the area. Probably the one that's more concerning is the knee, potentially if he cops a knock on the top of that patella, but it's just very, very minuscule. I'm not worried about him re-fracturing his patella or re-injuring his ankle. It's more like compensation injuries that I'd worry about. So like hamstring strains, calf strains, these kind of, you know, even Achilles tears, things like that, where are there things in those chains compensating for the fact that his knee and his ankle aren't quite 100%, but he looked pretty good the other night. He looked pretty good. So yeah, I don't think we have to be too worried about it at this point in time. I do have a little bit increased concern, but it's not enough for me to turn him off him. I think they played Penrith, obviously, the other night. I reckon if that Melbourne Storm team plays like a Redcliffe Dolphins or something like that, they probably put an absolute score on them and perhaps tons up, and you're not even worried about it.
Yeah, good shout on that. Question number three is about a patron who's got a really tough start to his season because he's got in draft Munster, Dave Fifita, and Chancellor Clockstar. Got any good news for any of those guys?
Well, I think Munster we've spoken about. Dave Fifita, I still think he's a chance for round three. I think the Titans have said round 4 to 6, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in round three. CNK, we speak about volatile situations. That's what I don't like. That's why I was really confident starting with Tuipiki, who went really well over the weekend. I just think CNK could be back in round 4. He also could be back in round 10. That's the hard thing once the lower back considerations come into it. I've heard reports that he's training well, and then I heard another report that he's flared it up, and it's like, who do you believe? Getting injury information from over the ditch is hard at the best of times. Yep. So, yeah, I think the most recent report that I heard is that he's training well and he's tracking well for round 4, but it's just, as soon as the lower back comes into it, it's way more unpredictable. So, yes, I've got good news on Fifita. I think he'll be back and he'll perform really well from when he's back. But Munster and CNK, I'm a bit concerned. Are you kind of on the same wavelength? Where are you at with those three? Oh, we've spoken about Munster. So, Fifita and CNK.
Munster we'll chat about, yeah. And I think I'd be shocked if Fifita wasn't there round 3, to be fair. He's had a pretty good amount of time before that game to rehab. And lastly, CNK, and same as you, I start with Tuipiki in center wing for standard setups. You know, I think it gets at least the first 4 weeks. And even after then, if he's looking pretty solid, they might be conservative with Chance and give him a little bit longer potentially. It's probably not a situation I really want to entertain. It's a hard one as well if you've got him in fantasy and you're running him at fullback. You probably want to have a look at, you know, I don't know if, you know, it depends on how deep you are, like how deep your league is, I should say. Because if you've got a 10 team, there's probably a few good fullbacks sitting on waivers. If you've got a 12 team, there may not be that luxury. But in 10 teams, I'd be shocked if Tyrell Sloan is owned. So he's probably a fairly good sort of substitution for a bit of time. There's a few guys with a dual, even Tuipehi himself. He may not be rostered either, and he's sitting up there on waivers in a couple. So you can probably cover Charns, and I probably wouldn't expect him to average what he averaged last year when he comes back, to be honest, either. I think I'd be looking at a different situation if I had that chance, to be fairly honest, Brian. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, very last one from Patreon, Brian, was about Jacob Carraz. Not super pumped up about he went first week. How long do you reckon it takes him to get back to his base stat best?
Yeah, look, I obviously got rid of the gun, Anari Tuola, to fit Carraz into my classic team. And Carraz, he didn't light the world on fire. I think at the end of the day, he got updated today. I think 49 was his score, and that was all in base and tackle breaks. So I think it's base and power technically, but I sort of see, you know, those kind of things without attacking stats. 49, I'm pretty happy with that for his first night. Well, I think if there was heaps of other really good scores from players who I'd been deciding against, I'd be a bit disappointed. But with how that week one went, Carraz is the least of my concerns at this point in time. Look, he is coming back. It's his first game back off that, back injury over the off-season. But, yeah, I just think maybe over the next 3 to 4 weeks he builds up that little bit. But I'm happy to kind of have him from the start, not have to waste a trade bringing him in. And I think the only thing is the center thing. I think the center thing definitely drops him back a little bit for me, for sure, but not enough for me to not think that he wasn't still worth a buy. Because if he was playing on the wing, I think I openly said, like, I'd back him to average 75. So does a dropping back to the center, 65 to 70 can still average, which I'm still happy with that. I'm happy to lock and load him, and he's a heart pick. I like watching him play. So, yeah, I still think it'll probably take him 3 to 4 weeks to kind of build up to that. But, yeah, I'm happy. I'm more than happy with 49 in base. How did you – do you own Carraz, and were you happy with him?
Yeah, when I watched the game, the Bulldogs just didn't get much ball. I think he was a bit of a product of the situation. When you look at their scores across the board as well, not many Bulldogs were lighting up the scoreboard. Like, Stephen Crichton got saved by a lucky try at the end. Same with Kikau laying on a try assist. Burton was really poor in scoring. The front rowers were pretty ordinary as well. There wasn't much to like. I think if you get a guy who's basing that in a team performance like that, I think you can expect bigger and better things.
Yep, completely agree, mate. All right, let's go over the main event of the podcast, the Supercoach Corner. We're back. We're back in Supercoach Corner.
Back in.
But we're also shit. I've never gone into a season hating my classic team more than this year. Like, yeah. the last 2-3 years, I remember picking my team and being like, I'm so happy with it. Like, I love this cheapie. I'm really happy with it. And I think that's probably why I worked so hard to get Carraz and Max King in, because I didn't have them with about 3 or 4 days to go. And I'm like, I hate everyone else. Like, I can't, there's no one that I look at and I'm getting super excited about. So I'm like, why not just pick the guys who you are big on in the preseason, your heart picks, the guys who you're behind. And that's kind of what I did. And it still worked out horribly, although they were average. But yeah, just horrible. Mate, hit me with your score. What are your plans? How are we going to dig ourselves out of this rut? Because I think there's probably a lot of listeners who are in similar boats.
Mate, there's a lot of ground to make up. So you've got me in the good bloke stakes for the first week of the season. So
I think we're both you're just the less shitter bloke. I think we're both not good blokes this week. Yeah.
Yeah. So I scored 776 as it stands now. I thought when I saw Ponga go 50 and Nico go about 30 and I had captain on Cleary, I was like, man, I'm the smartest person in the room here. I'm a genius. And then Cleary just put up, whatever he put up. I think he put up 36 in the end. And I just went, oh, mate, this is not going to be a good week. And it didn't go any better from there. So we talked about it on the pod last week. I was talking about Tamalolo versus Josh Curran. When Tamalolo, he and then Todd Payton absolutely rinsed me this week and played Jason Tamalolo for 21 minutes. So I don't know what the hell was doing there. Just after the game, he's like, yeah, we got put on ice. We were winning by heaps, so I just didn't go back on. And I was like, that's not doing anything for me if that's the state of play with you and the coach. So I don't know what to do about that. So trade plans this week, hard not to press the panic button when you only put up 776. But I guess, and I've got Inari Tuala as well. So I'm looking at him going to Jack Bostock, either, you know, Kyle Labert, maybe Tommy Talau, Jacob Gagai, Jesse Arthurs. I don't know. I'm probably going to flick him to someone there to get a bit of cash and then move Tamalolo to a different player. I'd love to get him up a bit higher if I could. Flegler got 54 minutes. I don't mind that. I guess the other ones to think about, you know, would be maybe a Kai Pierce-Paul in the second row if you really want to sort of stack that up a little bit more. But it's really looking like center wing to get a bit of cash and then probably get Tamalolo up and hope for bigger and better things next week. I think just on the eye test side of things for fantasy, this is maybe more draft geared than sort of standard geared. But I thought Nick Meaney was good with kicking and I thought he's pretty solid at centers. Like, I don't think he was exceptional. You know, Taylor May got the better of him a couple of times, but I don't think he was that bad. I think if he's goal kicking for the rest of the season, he's someone you've got to look at. Ross Cartwright had a game.
Hey, Cardi, the other day, he's back.
He's back.
I picked him at draft pick one in whatever it was, 2019. And it never looked good, but now it looks good. Good on you, Cardi.
Yeah, really good. And then the other ones were Maxi Plath from the Dolphins, you know, pumped out mid-40s. Kai Pierce-Paul talked about. Joey Lussick put pretty big minutes and pretty decent score. And Jeremiah Nanai looks like he's in pretty good shape. You got the full Nanai experience today with some brutally poor missed tackles, but then some very, very good ball and hand stuff. But for fantasy, we don't care about missed tackles. You just want guys who are just going to put up bulk attacking stats because that's where the money is, baby. So if you're thinking, how do I get someone in, you know, in the mid fives, Nanai is a pretty attractive little piece there to look at, I'd reckon. Even him and Omali Olakuatu, I thought, were outstanding in the second row for Supercoach purposes this week. Probably guys to look at sooner rather than later if you have the option. How did you score, Brian? And tell us your trade plans.
Mate, 8.15, so not much better. Still horrible, I think. It's just a horrid week. My trade plans, I'm never ever going to smash the trade button as hard or as fast as I am to get Taumalolo out of my team. I would never, ever blame anyone else for my decisions because it's my decisions. But I'm such an idiot because I spent all off season fielding questions about Taumalolo. Oh, it was last year just a down year because of his injury. I did the research. I analysed it. I came to the conclusion in the injury profiles it wasn't because of injury. I said, it looks like a coaching thing. It looks like there's not enough injury information there for me to be like, implication I say, for me to be like, this is an injury thing. It's a coaching thing. It's the way they are using him. But then I just started seeing all these content creators with Taumalolo in their team and I just was like, oh man, maybe it is going to be different this year. And I got sucked in. And I didn't, yeah, I just got sucked in. And we saw today whatever bullshit was going on. I actually hope he has an injury to explain whatever the hell went on today. Because 21 minutes, even though you're winning by 40, is still just absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Like, why not pull off Val Holmes or other big players as well? Like, Taumalolo isn't that important to your game plan because you barely played him last year. So why would you put him on ice? Like, it's not like if you lose Taumalolo, your team's stuffed because you haven't been using him for the last... Oh, mate, I'm going to rant. But, yeah, he's gone. Terrell May is in. Maybe my only trade. But I am tossing up something rogue like a Beau Firmore down because I said I'm pretty concerned about the whole foreign thing and Fifita coming back. So do I go like Firmore down to a cheapie? I thought Sam McIntyre, I was there today and I thought he looked really good on eye test and I think he scored okay. There's not many cheapies around who are scoring okay, but yeah, I thought he looked really good eye test wise. So do I go like Firmore down and then go Max King, who was not that great, up to like a Payne Haas or something like that, or even a Tino? I just think front row sucks so much, and it wasn't like any of the outside backs kind of lit it up or the halves lit it up that much that I'm like, do I just get one of the out-and-out gun front rowers and just be happy that I've got that position? Because front row otherwise, like, yeah, Tommy Flegler got good minutes, but he's still scored a try, and that was kind of the only thing that gave him a good score. So yeah. I think front row's just yuck. I'm pretty keen to get a Haas or a Tino in pretty quickly.
Yeah, I like that as a play, actually. The only other one I was sort of thinking about was, you know, what do you do at the halfback sort of position? But I'd be surprised if people jumped off the train there really quick. You know, I don't think there's really many downgrade options at fullback, but the team you're probably going to keep an eye on is the West Tigers. We don't know what that setup's going to look like, so there might be something that comes out that just gives you a little, oh, okay, maybe there's an outside back there, maybe there's a bench spot there. Maybe I just a vibe thing. Fanua Pole, I'm pretty keen on this year in draft setup. So I think he scored not great last year, but he's young, he's ascending. He played relatively big minutes at the 13 sort of role he's got in there. The edge guys are locked in, but then Utu Kamano hasn't lit it up and it's a new coach, so who knows? Clemens on the back end of his career. Alex Twile, he's a fan favourite, but we know what we're going to get there with him. And there's not too many other guys on the bench, so I just wonder, there might be someone in that forward rotation that sort of just breaks out a little bit. That's probably the one to keep an eye on. There might be an outside back that gets named. But the Tigers, at least, they're the only other team that we don't really know what it's going to look like. Maybe they can throw something up that gives us something to cheer for. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's been a bit of word around the place that Galvin, the 5'8", might start in the halves because of some injury concerns with one of their halves. I think it was Aiden Caesar. So you might get a little Galvin cheapy there. And especially, you know, Ray Stone out. Max Plath now is a pretty good option. He might start at 13. So, yeah, you might get Galvin there as well, which could be a nice little pickup too. But, yeah, guys, look, I think we've taken up enough of your time. That's a wrap. If you like the pod, give us a review. Recommend to a friend. Follow us on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up there. If you want more information like this, patreon.com/NRLphysio is your place to go. James, it was good to catch up with you last night in person. Good to catch up with you tonight and talk some footy, even though my team sucks. Have a good week, mate. Hopefully we can both be in the winner's circle next week because, yeah, today was, yeah. Look, I'm back in fandom, obviously, with footy and now I've got the Dolphins and I followed them all last year. But, yeah, I forgot how much I came into this year with a bit of confidence and a bit of hope and it got sapped today, so that sucked a little bit.
Really stuffs your week, doesn't it? When you get dusted in real life with the team that you love and support and give your heart earned to. And also when your fictional football team scores poorly, it's not a good time for the first few days of the week until you can make some changes and see some better output. So hopefully for your sake and for my sake, we get some better times ahead, Brian.
Love it, mate. All right, guys, have a good week and up the mighty, mighty, although they weren't that mighty today, but up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.